The BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the program and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words, and this program comes from the Beveridge Hall at London University. And those taking part are Nancy Spain, Dennis Powell, Dennis Norton, and Frank Muir. Here's round one to test their vocabulary. 2 marks if they get the meaning of the following words reasonably right. Beginning with Dennis Powell. Dennis, what is a polyhistor? P-O-L-Y-H-I-S-T-O-R, polyhistor.
Means the hell of a lot of historians.
It doesn't. It's one small head you've got to concentrate on.
One very learned scholar.
Yeah. It's a man of very varied learning, a great scholar, polyhistor. Now, Dennis Norton, what's the meaning of fusiform?
We may be people who do business with words, but we've never done business with this one.
It would help you, Dennis, if you were smoking a cigar rather than a cigarette.
It would help me if I was smoking a cigar. It would help me in every way if I could form is in the shape of fusiform, not flusiform.
No.
Yes, it's in the shape of fuse. A fuse is a piece of oblong porcelain with a wire running through the centre. So therefore, fusiform is anything which is in the shape of a bit of oblong porcelain with a wire. Yes, and as there are not many of these, the word is practically obsolete.
All right, half a mark for knowing it was in the shape of, and I did help you. It means tapering at both ends, like a cigar or a spindle, or rather like most cigars. The most expensive kinds of cigars have a sort of cut off at the end, I know, but shaped like a cigar. And now Nancy Spain. Nancy, what is a hornbook?
Well, it's a thing shaped like that, Jack.
That's no help.
Well, all right, you hold it at the bottom by its handle.
Yes?
And on top there is a sort of ghastly kind of thing like a mirror, mm-hmm. made of horn, I suppose. Yeah. And on this are printed A, B, C, and cat on dog, and dog is up on ox, and things like that. And goodness knows why, but the children used to learn to read from these meaningless phrases in little old schools.
Before you criticise medieval education any further, I'm going to give you your 2 marks. It is, in fact, a kind of child's primer.
Fusiform,
or the Lord's Prayer or things of that sort, mounted on a wooden tablet, covered with horn so it didn't all rub off. They hadn't got any sort of plastic at that stage, that's why they had to do it that way, and that's it. And now Frank Muir. Frank, what is a bear leader?
It's a kind of German song sung by nudists.
Frank, all I can say is that might be included in the program, but it isn't exactly what I want.
Is it the husky young leader of the pack?
No, I think one would be quite enough.
They would sort of take them round in parties and show them how to behave.
A courier?
Kind of courier.
You think so?
No.
Oh, I think so. Excuse us a moment, Jack.
Yes, of course.
We think it's a kind of chap who takes the others round.
Yes, that's all right.
Is it? Well, mark me then. I can't go on.
I think 1.5 marks would be a pretty generous mark. It's a travelling tutor, a chap who takes one of these unlicked cubs around the continent, bear being in the sense of a loutish, ill-mannered young man, until you've been tutor to him. Just like that. Well, before we start the second round, I give each team a quotation for them to write down, and I want the 2 women members of the team to study their quotations, and at the end I shall ask them where the quotations come from, So, Lewis Powell and Frank Muir, here's your quotation. We've been together now for 40 years. And Nancy Spain and Dennis, your quotation is, shoot, father, I am not afraid. And then at the end of the program, I should ask Frank and Dennis to give me their ideas of how these words came to be said or written. And I don't want any of these answers yet. Well, the next round is Shakespeare. And Shakespeare used lots of words which are not all in general use today. People quote them, and presumably when they quote them, they know what they mean. So that's a charitable assumption. 2 marks, if you get it right. Dennis Powell, what is a mumble news? M-U-M-B-L-E hyphen N-E-W-S, a mumble news.
Well, it must be somebody who comes along with a bit of news and mumbles it.
Very good.
Yes?
Logical, I consider. doesn't really tell you until you're absolutely mad what he has to tell you.
It tells much too much.
Tells too much?
Yes.
A gossip.
Oh, out with it, yes.
Gossip.
Yes, a gossip, yes. A chatterbox.
It's a tale-bearer, sneak, gossip, chatterbox, so on. And a good example of it is in Love's Labour's Lost, where Barone says, some carry-tale, some please-man, some slight zany, some mumble-news, some trencher knight, some dick that smiles his cheek in years and knows the trick to make my lady laugh. Just like that. Dennis Norden, ear-bussing or ear-kissing?
Well, you get a lot of it when you have somebody reading over your shoulder in an underground.
That's getting very close, Dennis.
And it's ear kissing. It wasn't peculiar to Shakespeare's time, surely. Any visit to the cinema. You're a film critic. You must have seen a lot of ear bussing.
Every morning at 10:30.
It is, yes. 10:30 in the morning.
Yes, sir.
Oh, dear.
That would only be with continental films. Yes. Is it some kind of affectionate?
No, on the least. Not at all affectionate. Rather malicious.
Probably stealing your earring.
People coming up and say, what's this ear?
I don't think you're somehow going to get this one, Dennis. I think I can mark
that's a pretty shrewd assumption.
It means whispered. And in Lear, Curran says to the nasty fellow, Edmund, nay, I know not. You've heard of the news abroad? I mean the whispered ones, for they are yet but ear-kissing arguments. It means putting your lips quite close up against somebody's ear, not because you're affectionate, but because you want to whisper something unpleasant. Nancy Spain, Shakespeare again. Rookie. R-O-O-K-Y. Rookie.
To the rookie wood.
Yes, now what's it mean?
I dare not go on, because it's unfair to quote Macbeth, the place will fall around us. But I imagine that it means swarming with rooks,
yes.
And perfectly beastly, absolutely disgusting, dark wood with terrible...
Yes. Now, yes, all right, you get your 3 marks. It's absolutely splendid, that was, Nancy. It's Macbeth, Act 3. Macbeth says, light thickens and the crow makes wing to the rookie wood. Good things of day begin to droop and drowse, whilst night's black agents to their praise do rouse. He's just about to have Banquo bumped off. And at great authority, Professor Empson sides partly on your side, Nancy, saying it can mean a wood that's already full of crows or rooks. It could mean murky or dusky, it could mean misty or gloomy, it could simply mean a rooking or perching wood, and you take a choice.
Depends which rook you breed.
Have you bred any good rooks, David?
I give up. Frank Muir, this is very appropriate. Knit.
Spitting out every word through clenched teeth. A small parasitic thing.
Good enough. And
Shakespeare,
and used as not as a term of love or anything of that sort.
Comes from Midsummer Night's Dream.
Oh, All right, yes. 3 marks less worst before. It comes in Love's Labour's Lost. It also comes in The Taming of the Shrew, where Petruchio is berating the tailor. Thou liest, thou thread, thou thimble, thou yard, three-quarters, half-yard, quarter, nail, thou flea, thou knit, thou winter cricket, thou. Now then, the next round. I think it's possibly true that the virtues and the merits of education and learning have been extolled through most ages, and today we tend to rate them fairly highly. But there were people every now and then who had other things to say about education and about institutes of learning. 2 marks, if you can tell me who wrote the following by their styles of writing. Here's yours, Dillis Powell. Soap and education are not as sudden as a massacre, but they are more deadly in the long run.
Soap and education,
yes,
okay,
are not as sudden as a massacre, but they're more deadly in the long run. He also said at one stage words to the effect that the reports of my recent death have been greatly exaggerated.
Mark Twain.
Helped you quite a lot there, didn't it?
Thank you, yes.
All right, I think 1.5, Dillis. It's Mark Twain and the facts concerning the recent resignation in Sketches New and Old, 1900. Dennis Norden. There is nothing on earth intended for innocent people so horrible as school. To begin with, it is a prison, but in some respects more cruel than a prison. In a prison, for instance, you're not forced to read books written by the warders and the governor. In prison, they may torture your body, but they do not torture your brain.
Is it somebody who often made this comparison with a prison? Somebody who said that home was a prison?
Yes.
Is it?
Yes.
Shaw?
Yes, quite right. Mm. Bernard Shaw, Parents and Children. Well done, Dennis. 2 marks. Nancy Spain, thou hast most traitorously corrupted the youth of the realm in erecting a grammar school.
A grammar school?
Mm.
And thou hast? Mm. I thought it was going to be Sophocles, you know. Sophocles.
I'll go on a bit longer if that'll help you. And whereas before our forefathers had no other books but the score and the tally, thou hast caused printing to be used, and contrary to the king, his crown and dignity, thou hast built a paper mill.
A paper mill?
Mm.
Oh, it could be Shakespeare.
It is Shakespeare.
It could be that mad play where they all whiz about in fours, pretending, you know, and sending up schoolmasters the whole time.
No, that's a good guess.
Love's Labour's Measure for Measure, or one of them, you know.
No, Love's Labour Lost, you're thinking of.
Yes.
All right, I give you 0.5 mark for Shakespeare. It's Shakespeare's Henry VI, Part 2. It's said by the rebel, Jack Cade, to Lord Say, whom they've just captured. And they say, away with him, away with him. He speaks Latin, a good sort of scientific maxim. And then they shoot him or hang him or something. Frank Muir. Everybody who is incapable of learning has taken to teaching.
Is this the man that did the those who can do, those who can't teach?
Yeah.
Shaw?
No, I'm sorry. You're probably right and I'm probably wrong, but it's nearly a contemporary of Shaw's and an Irishman.
Oscar Flaherty Wills Wilde.
Yes. I think 1.5, because I did help there. Oscar Wilde, The Decay of Lying. And now we come to the last round, and we go back to the 2 quotations I gave the teams earlier on in the programme. For 2 marks, Dillis Powell, can you give me the origin of your quotation? And if you remember, it was, we've been together now for 40 years.
It's a song.
Hmm.
Sung by Albert Chevalier.
And written by?
Albert is my darling.
It's called Mel Dutch, but I can't.
Yes.
Who wrote it? Himself, I should think.
Yes, that's right. It's Albert Chevalier, wrote the words and the music and sang it, and it's My Old Dutch. Well done. 2 marks. And now, Nancy Spain, the origin of yours, which was, shoot, father, I am not afraid.
William Tell.
Well, son of William Tell.
Well, yes, sir. William Tell, Jr.
Yes, sequel. 20 years after, or something, yes. Well done. I don't know where it's written down, and it is a legend, and it's supposed to be authentic, and the Swiss constitution is all founded on it and all that. And now I want Dennis Norden and Frank Muir to give me their ideas of how these words came to be said or written, and on this occasion, the marks will go to whichever unlikely explanation draws the longer and larger amount of applause from the audience in the hall. And beginning with Frank Muir, we've been together now for 40 years.
This morning, at breakfast, I'd finished my morning paper. I don't like cornflakes, they're too... and I went to the library while my wife cleared the table. And I went back and helped my wife wash up. My wife said, "Why do you spend all your time reading that book?" So I clattered the plates a bit, just to show I was a bit peeved. And said, "I don't know why you take that tone. This book has been a turning point in my life. It's the Merry Andrew Encyclopedia of Universal Knowledge. I don't know why people need to go to universities when this book is there." And I've been reading it. I said to my wife, "I'm full of information, you know." I said to my wife, "Do you know, do you realize that crabs are stone deaf?" I said to my wife, "Do you realize that in the 18th century, if you had defective hearing, there was a cure. One got a tuft of tow. It hadn't to be flaxen tow. It had to be woolen tow, which you got by gathering it from the hedges that the sheep had rubbed up against. And you dipped this little piece of tow into a warm mixture of honey and oil of squills." Well, I said, "Now, what on earth do you want all that information for?" I said, "Ah, but one day, on my word..." Jack Long's going to say, "Now a quick round. Frank Muir, how did they cure bad hearing in the 18th century?" I'll say, "Bit of tow, dip it in the honey." And you see, I shall appear so erudite. No one will be eruder than I shall be with this backlog of information, because it hasn't happened yet until this afternoon, you see. Because I wanted to come up early so as not to be late for the do this evening. And I arrived a bit early, and then it happened. Because I thought I'd go and look at that new skyscraper hotel in Park Lane. So I went, it's terribly tall, isn't it? If you put your head right up, you can only just see the top story. Well, I couldn't quite see the top story, so I backed a bit, you see. It's an extraordinary scientific thing that a head can go between park railings comfortably. It's something to do with the sort of barbed shape of the ears or something. But I was fast lodged. I only had a spare hour. Well, the fire brigade were terribly good, and they came along and they sawed away, and the police held the traffic back, and they got me clear. But now things were a bit desperate, because I was due here at 6:15. It was then about 6:05, and Dennis was going to wait for me outside. So I jumped on a bus, and I paid, and I got off, you know. At least I was just about to get off, and I'm very neat about tickets, you know. Isn't it a funny thing, you know, that a... that a wrist which will go through a used ticket slot, quite simply... whether it's the wristwatch caught underneath, I don't know. So I pulled like mad and rather badly scraped the back of my hand, and I dashed into a chemist's shop and got one of those blue rolls of cotton wool. And so I ran the last 1.25 miles to pick up Dennis. And if you undo a long blue roll, it goes all over the place. There's miles of the stuff. I only wanted a little bit to dab. I stuffed it in my pockets, and it went all over my suit, and I dabbed it on my hand. And I arrived, and there was Jack Longland at the gate. He said, "May I have an explanation of this behaviour?" He said, "What are you covered in cotton wool for?" And then inspiration struck. I said to Jack, "This isn't cotton wool. This is tow. Dennis and I have been on an errand of mercy. We have been collecting material to assuage the pains of those among us with dodgy harkers." Jack said, "Do what?" And I drew myself up to my full height, 6'6" in my shocking feet, and I said to him, "We've been to gather tow for 40 years."
always wanted to know what the word apocryphal means, and I know now. So back to Dennis Norden, and if you remember, his quotation was, "Shoot, Father, I am not afraid."
I am completely disenchanted with the whole William Tell legend. As you know, this whole dreary incident took place at a time when the whole of Switzerland was occupied by the Austrians. And the Austrians, as is the custom with governing bodies, made it their first duty to impose a tax. It was an archery tax. Because, you see, in Switzerland, archery was the prevailing sport, very much as golf is over here. And you can't play golf in Switzerland, you see, because of the Alps. The ball rolls downhill, and you cannot perfect a swing when you are roped to your caddy. So, archery had taken its place, and because of its popularity, it was obviously something to put a tax upon. William Tell refused to pay the archery tax. Now, in those days, if you didn't pay your tax, there was a very definite procedure. The tax authorities shot you, which is somewhat different from today, when you are just allowed to die a slow, lingering death. So, having proclaimed he would not pay this tax, they sent a minor tax official round to shoot him. However, William Tell's son protested. Now, he had two sons. One was called Fred, the other one was called Bert. And the son said to the minor tax official, "You cannot shoot my father, because with him, archery is not a sport, it is his way of life. You see, he bets in pubs that he can shoot things with a bow and arrow for drinks. And as he is a habitual drunk, I claim it is his way of life, and he can claim tax exemption." Well, this official was only a minor official, and he hesitated, and he said, "Well, of course, if he's that good at it..." Young Fred, who was a tough little fellow, very aggressive, with jug ears, he said, "Good at it." He said, "If you come tomorrow, my father will shoot an apple off my head." The tax official said, "Well, if he's that good, all right, I'll come back." Immediately he left. William seized young Fred. "Dummkopf," he said, pronouncing both the P and the F, which is difficult. He said, "I am not that good." The boy said, "I didn't say what kind of an apple. What about a pineapple?" Next day, the tax official came back, and he'd brought a tax commissioner with him. And there was little Fred with a pineapple upon his head. And the tax commissioner said, "I'm very sorry, but that will not do. Either you place this small Cox's orange pippin upon your head and allow your father to shoot it, or else we will shoot your father." They put it upon young Fred's head. But unfortunately, Fred had been born in the German part of Switzerland and had the characteristic Teutonic skull, which is fusiform. Now, you will all have jotted down in your notebooks the meaning of fusiform, and you will know it means it comes slightly to a point, and no apple will stay on it. So brave and tough as he was, little Fred could not put the apple upon his head for his father. The tax commissioner said, "In that case, we shall have to shoot you." William said, "Wait, I have another son." And he called Bert. Now, Bert came out. He was younger. And a very different kind of boy from Fred. No tough he. Sensitive, timid. Tax Commissioner said, as your brother cannot perform this, we must ask you. Either you place this small Cox's orange pippin upon your head and allow your father to shoot it, or else we will shoot your father. To which the boy made the reply, which has been so often misquoted. Shoot father. I am not tough Fred.
I think by your vote, William Tell and Rossini and Dennis Norden get home. And that brings us to a most interesting result in which Dennis Powell and Frank Muir have scored exactly the same marks as Nancy Spain and Dennis Norden. And it also brings to an end this edition of My Word.
In My Word, you heard Dilys Powell, Nancy Spain, Frank Muir, and Dennis Norden, introduced by Jack Longland. The program was devised by Tony Shryan and Edward J. Mason and presented by the BBC. ¶¶